Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
And good morning, this is Phil Goff, Labour MP for Mount Roskill, welcoming you to Red Alert Radio on Planet FM 104.6. Today the topic is euthanasia. Now, this is a hugely controversial topic. It's been around for a very long time, and Parliament hasn't had the courage to face up to legislate on it. And the courts have said in the recent and very sad case of Lucretia Seals that the courts can't make a decision to make it legal for a doctor to administer a lethal dose to a patient who is terminally ill in the last stages of their life and feel that because of the suffering they are enduring, it's time to bring it to an end. Well, I've been in Parliament through a number of different attempts by members to bring in what we used to call private members' bill to make it lawful for a person that is terminally ill to determine the nature of their final moments and how they might die. Michael Laws, he's in the plural, I think, brought in a bill called Death with Dignity in 1995. It was overwhelmingly defeated in Parliament, about 2-1. I supported that bill. And more recently, but now well over a decade ago, Peter Brown from the New Zealand First Party brought in a similar piece of legislation that was more narrowly defeated in Parliament. And when he left Parliament, Marion Street, a Labour List MP, brought in similar legislation or put the legislation in the ballot as a member's bill. It needs to be drawn by ballot. But despite it being in the ballot for several years, it was not chosen. After the election, this bill was picked up by my Labour colleague, Ian Lees-Galloway, the MP for Palmerston North. But on advice from the leader of the Labour Party, it was decided to pursue a different way of getting legislation or the concept of change discussed, and that was a petition through a select committee, and we're awaiting the delivery of that petition to Parliament. It's my pleasure this morning to welcome to the program Ian Lees-Galloway, who is MP for Palmerston North and who has looked very closely at the wider issue. Welcome to the program, Ian.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Now, let's just talk about what was proposed in the bill that Marion Street had in the ballot but was never drawn and which you were hoping to pick up. What were the actual provisions of that bill? What did it allow for? In what circumstances could a person seek from their doctor a lethal injection or a tablet to end their life if they were suffering in the final weeks probably of their life?
Well, the most important thing to recognise is that this is about getting a physician, a medical practitioner to assist someone at the end of life. And that could only occur under some very stringent circumstances. The first is that the person had to be suffering from a terminal disease that was likely to end their life within 12 months, or that they were in some other way experiencing prolonged suffering from which there was no return. And really the overriding factor here was that they should be suffering from a terminal disease. The second thing is that they had to get not just one but two certifying medical practitioners to agree that they had a disease, to agree that it was terminal and that they were likely to die within 12 months, and to certify that the person had been appropriately counselled, that they had been encouraged to discuss this with their family, that the practitioner, the practitioners, both of them, had appropriately explored all the options with the person. So quite a lot of safeguards and protections built into the legislation that someone would have to get through before they were able to get anywhere near actually coming to the point where they could get assistance to end their life.
Okay, so that's pretty comprehensive, and I guess the safeguards are the important thing, because when I listen to the arguments of those who are opposed to euthanasia, they say this is something that can be misused. It might be an elderly person and their family encouraging them not to be a burden, or it might be causing a person prematurely to make a decision to take their life when there was still a chance that they could recover. You think that the bill that was drawn up and that you were looking at sponsoring provided all the safeguards to stop abuse of the nature that the critics of the bill, highlighted?
Look, I think it did. But of course, you know, the point of our select committee process, one of the best things I think about the New Zealand parliamentary process is that all our legislation goes to select committee. And there it could be scrutinised, and if there are any gaps in it, those could be appropriately dealt with. So, look, on the face of it, I think the legislation, I had a good look at the legislation before I agreed to sort of take it up from Marion. I felt that it did have the protections in place, as well as giving people choices about how their life would end if they had a terminal disease. But as I say, the really great thing about our parliamentary process is we can't just push this through without being properly scrutinised by the public and by experts, and if there were any deficiencies in it, I'd be very open to the idea of addressing those to make sure that it was legislation that satisfied everybody's concerns.
Yeah, now you may or may not know the answer to this. Was the bill that you were looking at similar in nature to that was sponsored back in 2003 by Peter Brown that almost went through?
To be honest, I don't know the answer to that. No, I'm not sure similar or different it is.
Yeah. Okay, and it took account, presumably, of the legislation that already exists in a number of countries around the world. For our listeners' information, I think you've got Belgium, Netherlands and Luxembourg, Canada and Switzerland that all allow euthanasia in particular circumstances, five states in the US and in South Africa. Now, one or two people that I've heard in the media have said, I think probably particularly in respect to Belgium, that this was, this left open huge loopholes, and people were allowing themselves to be put to death without the safeguards. Have you looked at how it works in those particular countries? I mean, obviously it has been working in a number of those countries for quite a long period of time. I think the Netherlands probably for about 13 years, and similarly Belgium. So we have seen experience of this, and in fact I know that people in the United Kingdom that feel in the last weeks or months of their life that they can't bear what they are having to put up with any longer can go to a place like the Netherlands or like Switzerland, and they can get a doctor-assisted death in those countries. But are you familiar with those countries and how generally it has worked? Presumably, if there were big problems, they would have changed the legislation.
Yeah, look, there's a real variety of approaches out there, from very straightforward and non-prescriptive legislation to extremely prescriptive legislation. You listed off a variety of different jurisdictions that have either, I suppose, what you call euthanasia or assisted suicide, and there is a distinction between the two. And so that's certainly one of the different approaches is in some jurisdictions you have to be able to administer it to yourself.
Yes.
Which obviously comes with complications for certain diseases, but in others it's a little bit freer in that the doctor can administer the substance that's required. So and yes, there's a variety of approaches. Belgium is often cited by opponents as one which is perhaps a little bit too loose. Some question marks around the age at which you can request assisted suicide and the circumstances under which you can request assisted suicide in Belgium. Certainly what Marion was proposing is a lot tighter than what they have there. But actually interestingly there are the Netherlands, what the Netherlands has is probably not as prescriptive as what we have been talking about up until now in New Zealand, and yet they seem, for the most part, to have a system that works well. And I've seen criticism of the Netherlands system, but it mostly comes from people who would appear to criticise any system of end of life choice, people who are just fundamentally opposed to the concept.
Yeah. One of the interesting countries was Canada, because I think the Supreme Court in Canada in probably February of this year, I think they ruled unanimously 9-0 that somebody suffering intolerably and permanently has the right to assisted death, but they suspended their judgment for 12 months to allow Parliament to make laws to reflect that decision. Mm. Now, that was interesting because in New Zealand, Lucretia Seals, who was a lawyer herself, in the absence of any action from Parliament, decided to go to our High Court. I think it was the High Court here. And the High Court, unlike the Supreme Court in Canada, made the decision, you know, and I think I understand why, that this is something that under current law they would rule that a doctor who assisted a patient to suicide could be guilty of murder or manslaughter, and that this was a decision for Parliament to make rather than the court. But it's interesting that the Canadian court went in the opposite direction, but then said, but now Parliament should legislate on this, which I thought was quite an inventive way of dealing with the law. Have you had the chance to look at the High Court decision and look at their reasoning in New Zealand?
I haven't looked at it in detail, but it wasn't a surprise that, because I suppose the difference between the Supreme Court decision in Canada and the High Court decision in New Zealand is that the Supreme Court in Canada was essentially ruling around the Bill of Rights and constitutional matters in Canada. And as you know better than I do, of course, Parliament is supreme in New Zealand, and we have no formal constitution, and we can certainly override any decisions around the Bill of Rights.
Yes.
So in New Zealand, ultimately it is Parliament that is supreme, and we just don't have anything in our law that created the gap that I suppose that a judge could have used to say that yes, physician assisted death was legal. So the two judgments are not incompatible in that they refer to quite different jurisdictions. But I think the message was very, very clear from Justice Collins that this is a matter that Parliament must address. And if there is to be any change, Parliament will have to address it. And I think you talked about sort of inventive approaches. One thing that happened in Canada, in Quebec, I think actually, in Canada, was that there was a parliamentary examination of the issues around end-of-life choice. There was a free debate in the Quebec Parliament around end-of-life choice without there being a piece of legislation in front of them to sort of determine the will of Parliament and to discuss the public debate that was going on around the matter. And I suppose that is similar to what we are now proposing to be the way forward in New Zealand.
Yeah, but ultimately, I think that's quite a good idea in the absence of a huge appetite by parliamentarians to run with a bill. It's kind of strange. Both of us could comment on this one, I guess. But in a recent poll by Research New Zealand, it was only just over 500 people, so it's got a margin of error. But it found that overwhelmingly 74% agreed that a doctor should legally be able to euthanize a terminally ill patient if that patient has a painful, incurable disease and requests their life to be ended. That was the question. Mm. So I think it's a fairly clear-cut question. 20% didn't agree and 6% weren't sure. But that's three quarters of the New Zealand public that believe that we should change the law, and yet Parliament is reluctant to do it. Now, I think that Parliament is culpable because we are not picking up that public sentiment, mm. and we're listening to people. And I don't doubt that the opponents of euthanasia are generally decent people that have genuine concerns about it. But in the end, a decision needs to be made. And I guess I'm interested in your comments on this. My personal position is this. If I suddenly found that I had a terminal disease and that at the end of my life there was a chance that I would lose control over my bodily functions and the pain could not be mitigated, I think I would want to have the choice to make the decision. I don't know whether I'd make the decision to ask, for an injection or a tablet, but I'm absolutely convinced that I'd want it at least be able to make that choice. And a lot of people have made this comment, some of them people that did suffer from terminal illness, that what worried them most of all was that with all of the other things and all of the other pressures on them, facing the end of their life, they worried that they would be incapacitated in a way that they could not make the decision even to take their own life, and that they would end up their life without dignity and in incredible suffering. And that, they said, made the final stages of their life that much more difficult. Now, it's very hard to argue against that. Why should I have the right to tell somebody else that they don't have the right in the last stages of their life to end suffering if it becomes unbearable? What gives me that right to stop them, or anybody else the right to stop them? What's your view on that?
Well, that's pretty much exactly how I feel as well, Phil, which is why I was enthusiastic about picking this issue up. So as I've been getting into this and looking at some of the stories and some of the evidence from overseas, a few interesting things have cropped up. One which I think is we've got to make sure people understand is at the heart of this debate is that we're talking about ending suffering. We're not talking simply about ending life, but we're talking about not requiring people to go through unnecessary suffering. And I really don't I don't understand why we wouldn't give someone the choice to bring suffering to an end if there were no other options available to them. The second thing which is interesting is that more often than not, people who do choose to go through with this are shortening their lives by a matter of days. It's usually not even weeks, certainly not months or years. It's usually in those very, very last days where you ultimately do start to lose your dignity and you start to experience extreme suffering. That's the point at which people usually want to make use of this type of regulation. And the other thing that's often very interesting is we hear people say, family members could put people under a lot of pressure to bring their life to an end. Well, in fact, actually, often what is the case is the family members, out of love and respect and out of not wanting to lose their family member, are often the ones putting the pressure on medical personnel to do things to prolong a person's life.
Yeah.
When there is no quality of life left and the person is just suffering. So, but there's a lot of different debates. There's a lot of different value judgments and moral judgments we made here. But the point you made is absolutely right, that this is about giving the person their own individual choice. If you're personally opposed to bringing your life to an end early, then that's fine. No one is going to be forcing anybody to use this. This is simply about giving people a choice. And the other interesting thing I've learned through all of this is that in the end, actually only a tiny proportion of people who embark on this process end up using it. Their life may come to an end in a fashion which is dignified and comfortable, and they don't want to make use of an end-of-life directive, or they just simply choose that that's not the path that they want to go down. But they had the choice, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think that last point deserves emphasising. You know, with palliative care, most of us can actually die without pain and with dignity and let nature take its course. My father-in-law died that way of lung cancer. And I saw him not long before he passed away. And, you know, apart from, you know, the facing death is often difficult, he was in no pain and he was coping with the last stages of his life quite well. So we're not saying, you know, this would become the norm. We're saying this is an option for people in circumstances where, for one reason or the other, palliative care does not meet their particular needs, because sometimes when you listen to the critics, it's as if we want to go around, you know, freely administering lethal injections to people all over the place, and nothing could be further from the truth. I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said, actually, the instinct of most of us, when our parents or our loved ones are in the last stages of their life, is to try to prolong it. And I know that's what we did with my mum, and, you know, including tube feeding, when actually she just kept telling us, look, I've run my race, I want to go. And I suppose, you know, I was reading the case of a New Zealand writer by the name of Tui McBeath, and she was terminally ill, and I think it was motor neuron disease she had. And, you know, first of all, she lost her ability. Sorry, she was a painter, not a writer. She lost the ability to paint, which was her passion. And then she couldn't work at all. She couldn't drive. She was tube fed. She couldn't walk, and she became totally reliant on full-time help. And she knew that, that she had no quality of life, and her decision in the end was simply to refuse to eat and drink. And it took 9 days from that decision for her life to come to the end. And as one of her friends commented, she knew when the time was right, and the law actually made her suffering greater by the nature of the way that her life came to an end. And I just think, you know, we think this is about human rights and human dignity, and the right to life is an absolute right, but also there is a right for a person to say, now I have reached the point where the quality of my life has gone completely, I am suffering, there is no quality in my life, and I want to go. And we are saying, no, we know best for you. You're going to suffer to the end. And I think that we've got it. I think we've got that wrong.
I think we do too. And I actually think the public, you know, this is a debate, as you say, which has been around for an awfully long time. Other countries and states have addressed this quite some time ago. And we've looked at it a couple of times in New Zealand. And that's given the public an opportunity to really think about it, to reflect on it, and it does appear that there is quite a large majority of support for this as a concept, and that's where I think how Parliament proceeds from here is quite important. If you do put up a bill, and I understand that David Seymour is now thinking about doing this, and fair enough. If you do put up a bill, first of all, as we both know, you've got about a 1 in 8.
It's a lottery, yeah.
Pulled out of the ballot.
Yeah.
So it could get stuck there forever.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that there could be, you know, there could be one or two things in a bill that nervous politicians will use as a reason to vote against it at first reading. And it never gets that, it never gets to select committee. You never get the opportunity to have the debate. You never get the opportunity to try and make it work. And that's why I'm quite interested in the idea of taking it to a select committee for an inquiry, even though that does not automatically result in legislative change, so that we can look at the issue from a principle space, to discuss all the concerns, to discuss how it's been done in different ways overseas, to look at the evidence, to look at the public support for it, and try to draft up some recommendations or maybe even some legislation that does have a broad consensus around it and is based on some evidence which has been brought together through the parliamentary process. I think that a bill that came out of that process might have a lot better chance of advancing through Parliament than simply a single member acting on their own and hoping that they get support at first reading.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Maybe the way forward is there is a petition, as I understand it, being presented or about to be presented to Parliament to use that as the opportunity for a select committee to do a thorough analysis of the options and the examples of where people are given the right at the very end of their life to terminate their life a little earlier than it would otherwise have happened to alleviate suffering. And at the same time, of course, somebody can put the bill into the ballot, and if it's drawn quickly, yes, great, and if it's not, it might sit there for 3 or 4 years. So I think the way that you've pointed forward is the best way for Parliament now to advance. Let's consider the petition, let's go through the arguments, let's have the public discussion, let's have the public input, and then if and when a bill is drawn, Parliament will be in a much better place to deal with it. And maybe even a government will have the courage to bring the legislation forward and we can tackle it at that point. It's a tough issue, but you know, presumably we are elected to Parliament to lead on issues and to have courage sometimes to say this issue needs to be resolved. And while some people are vehemently against, a lot more people actually believe that this is the right thing and the most humane thing for us to do. I'll give you, we've just got a couple of minutes left, the chance to have your last say, and then I want to quote a couple of people, including Lucretia Seale's partner and another man that was in the paper the other day who is terminally ill with cancer. Any last comments from you, Ian?
Yeah, look, my comment is that this is something that Parliament is going to need to lead on. It's a shame that the government doesn't appear to be prepared to lead, but I think that in the absence of leadership from government, Parliament can do things that progress the issue, and I think a select committee inquiry is the right way to do that. I would hope that if we go through that process and we manage to reach a consensus, that a government would be prepared to take it forward. A government bill can be progressed through Parliament. It doesn't have to sit on the ballot and wait. And we have precedents for the government putting up legislation which it then provides a free vote, a conscience vote to its MPs and other MPs around Parliament on. So okay. I don't think there's any barrier to this being progressed as a government bill. Let's try to reach some consensus and take it forward from there.
Thanks, Ian. Let's just finish with these two quick quotes. One's from a guy called John Titchener who's dying at the moment, and he says, "People who have different views to mine say I have to suffer because of their beliefs." And the partner of Lucretia Seale's, when he told her that the court had said no, she looked at him as if to say, in his words, "Isn't this my life, my body?" I think that's a solemn note to end on. Thank you very much to the listeners for joining us on Red Alert Radio on Planet FM 104.6. Look forward to joining with the program next week.
Get Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.